Welcome to another preview show here on the Cycling Dating Extra channel, if you're listening on the podcast available on Spotify. And today we are talking about one of the big ones, if not the biggest, Ronde van Vlaanderen. And here to discuss all things Tour of Flanders is, of course, Patrick Blake of Audi Cycling and one third of the Echelon Cycling Podcast. And I mean, Patrick, Ronde van Vlaanderen, where do you rate this as a race and what additions kind of stick out in the last few years for you?
I mean, this is going to be one of the best bike races going in the whole calendar. It's one of a few one-day races which I think kind of people who would only consider themselves to be kind of like Tour de France cycling fans might also tune in for. It's a serious race. And in terms of additions that stand out, I mean, I've got to say that Asgreen one was pretty cool. I don't think anybody thought like that Asgreen was going to beat Van der Poel in that sprint. That was absolutely crazy to think about that. And I mean, of course, Poggi last year really rocking up and beating Van der Poel basically on the Van der Poel race. Like, Van der Poel has an insane record in this event. So that was also quite an exceptional feat by Poggi to turn up and beat the King of Flanders basically in his own backyard. Well, even though it's Dutch, but you get what I mean. So yeah, it's a really cool race and I think we're also in for a good addition this time around as well.
Yeah, I mean, Peter Sagan winning, I think, was like a huge moment as well. Philippe Gilbert winning, Boonen, Cancellara, all these kind of great clashes of titans. And if it wasn't for Laporte, who was annoying last year at the Euros, we would have had the world champion versus the European champion potentially on one of these climbs. But that dream's gone. But I mean, with that out of the way, dreams aside, Patrick, what does this year's route look like for the riders?
So the 108th edition takes us from Antwerp to Oudenaarde. It is 271 kilometers, which is an awfully long day in the saddle. And of course, we take in 135 kilometers about halfway through the race. We take in our first ascent to the Ardequam on sort of the gateway to all the cobble climbs that are yet to come. And then, of course, it's followed up by, you know, the Molenberg, the Morgenstart, the Valkenberg, Ardequam on Paterberg combination for the first time. Then we've got the Koppenberg, Tienberg, the Kreisberg, and then we've got the Ardequam on Paterberg combination for a second time. And then we've got about 15 kilometers of flat to the finish line, where we may have a solo victor at that point, just somebody rolling in on a bit of a procession. Or we could have a scenario that we've had in the past where it's two people going to the line, and therefore you just don't know how it's going to end up, and it could end up in a tete-a-tete or in a sprint. So I kind of hope it's a head-to-head sprint and it's not just somebody riding off for the last 15 kilometers. It does make it more interesting to watch because you don't know who the victor is going to be. And yeah, it's going to be a really hard one. 271 kilometers is not to be sniffed at when you consider that, you know, San Remo is something like 20 kilometers more than this, but includes far less climbing and far less kind of like positional battling. That's just why Flanders is so difficult. It's because you need to fight for every entrance into every one of these sectors.
Yeah, but Patrick, we might as well go into the favourites. And as you said, where best to start with? Then the King of Flanders, Mathieu van der Poel. Yes, he was somewhat dethroned last year a bit, but I mean, he just had a sabbatical. World champion coming into this race. I mean, bidding to be the first world champion to win since Peter Sagan, if my memory serves me right. And obviously, I was salivating all over the place on the prospect of him winning Milan-San Remo as world champion, as there were so many connotations on that, but that didn't happen. So the dream's over on that part. But nevertheless, this would be his third victory. He would get one step closer to the all-time record as well if he wins. Reminder of his record, 2019, fourth place, where he did have that crash and then still recovered, which was an Herculean performance to say the least. Then we had 2020, Wout van Aert and him duking it out after Alaphilippe had his whoopsie with the motorbike, which, what a great addition that was as well. We didn't even speak of that. 2021, him and Pog had a bit of a dance, and then at the end, he... Wait, am I missing out one? No, 2021, Eskane. What am I saying? The Dane forgetting the Danish victory. Yeah, Eskane somehow beating him in a sprint. I was sure that Eskane had lost that, but whatever. Brilliant. But then we had 2022 where Tadej Pogačar and him had a bit of a dance. And then in that finale, Tadej Pogačar boxed in, but Mathieu van der Poel did the business and won. And then last year, as you mentioned, Tabagacha rode off into the sunset after dropping Matcha Manipul. And I mean, Patrick, he hasn't had the most race days this year, three in fact. But obviously, he's had a packed cyclocross season as well, winning the World Championships in Tabor. But yeah, how do you see Matcha Manipul's chances, and also who's on his team?
See his chances being very good. Like, there's a good probability that you're going to be seeing the world champion winning this race. But he's supported by Jasper Philipsen, Maris Ballested, Caden Groves, bit of an odd one in my eyes, but I kind of like it. Søren Krogh Andersen, Sylvain Dillier, and Gianni Vermeersch. I think it's a decent squad. I'm interested to see how Philipsen is used in this, whether he's just going to try and make a group two and sprint for the minor placings, whether he's kind of capable of doing that. I'm not sure. He's obviously in flying form this year. But yeah, Vanderpool's really the big name that everybody's needing to beat, because although Pedersen did beat him at Gent-Wevelgem and looked to have him on the ropes on the Kemmelberg, this is a different style of race altogether. And I think that Vanderpool always just goes well in this race. It seems like although he was struggling at Gent-Wevelgem, maybe in places, it's possible that that's because, you know, he was just going so hard in E3 and maybe he wasn't fully recovered. But I expect to see an absolutely flying Vanderpool, especially since he's not doing Dwaalsdal, so he gets a little bit more recovery time as opposed to some of his main competitors.
Yeah, I agree. E3 and Gent-Wevelgem are, of course, very close. Obviously, some of his other rivals did both. We shan't name his name, Mesh Pilsen. I mean, he's had a phenomenal start to the year, to say the least, whatever metric you want to use. And, I mean, how do you see him winning this? Is it one of those where he rides off into the sunset, or is he going to come to the finish with someone, hopefully not a Danish guy, because then he loses the sprint?
Probably best if he tries to go solo, I think. Although, thinking about it, he's never done that. He's never won Flanders solo. It's always his two victories were against, well, when Pog was swapped by Madouas and Van Baal, and also when he beat Wout van Aert. So Vanderpool's never gone solo, but if he channels what he did in E3, then it's very possible that he could go solo. I think that's his best chance of victory, obviously, because then he's not up against anyone. There's no other kind of like people to ruin his day. But I mean, speaking of people who might ruin his day, Mads Pedersen. I mean, I'm saying his name before Matthew Vanderpool's other rival, but Pedersen is the one who's beaten Vanderpool on Sunday in Gent-Wevelgem.
And in a sprint?
In a sprint.
Oh, okay. Wout did it last year in E3, so can't forget about that.
But Lidl Trek with an incredibly strong team, and just also in a fantastic form, it seems, with Pedersen, Tim de Klerk, Alex Kirsch, Jonathan Milan, Tom Schoins, Jasper Stuyven, and Edward Turns. I mean, Stuyven's been looking great. He would have been, I think, in that front group with Pedersen and Vanderpool, but he had a puncture in Gent-Wevelgem, so I think that Stuyven's Gent-Wevelgem performance isn't representative of how good he is at the moment. Schoins as well is really good over these long, hard days. Pedersen, obviously in fantastic form. Milan is like a sprinting option. This is a insanely good Classics team.
Yeah, no, Lidl Trek, I think they have really, they've just matured ever so slightly over the years. Like, almost the same personnel, yes, Milan in and a few other changes, but the stem of Schoins, Stuyven, and Mads Pedersen have really just forged this incredible strength they have. And the the input of Lidl as well as a sponsor has really just upped everything. And they're definitely going to be one of the teams to look at. And they're really not afraid to like take control of a race as well. And when most people are looking towards Alpecin and this Melissa bike, yeah, they've definitely just thrusted them in themselves in between, if not further than one of them.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that Pedersen's the main man, but I think they've got some fantastic secondary options in Stuyven and Schoins who could get up the road and really get into a move. Kind of like what happened last year, you could say. And kind of really try and disrupt things. So, and it just means that Pedersen can sit in, and because he's the main man that they're going to try and win this with. But it wouldn't surprise me if one of their domestiques managed to also get a really good result for themselves alongside Pedersen.
Yeah, Stuyven second in in E3.
Yeah.
Mats Pedersen getting Wilgram, obviously, and then scoring second in Strada. I mean, and then we're not even counting the other top 10s they had in E3 as well. Alex Kirsch and Skoyn. So just everyone's firing right now. I think if it's going to be a year, this is the year that they could reclaim another monument. But I mean, Mats Pedersen, his big goal is to get that monument. It's kind of, we were talking about it on the Echelon, that this is the big thing that he's missing to really get himself into that upper tier Galactico tier that we always refer to. And yeah, he's fighting against a Danish icon as well, Paul Sørensen, who has won Tour of Flanders as well. So he wants to be the number one Danish one-day rider. But I mean, Patrick, how does he win this? He's been second in 2018. He was in the breakaway there, and then Terpstra caught him back. And then last year he was on the podium after being out there again trying it, but that didn't quite work. And then he won the sprint against Wout van Aert in the Best for the Rest. So how does Mats Pedersen actually win this? Because Ken Webergem, like you said in the recap, is not as hard as this.
I do think that this is a better Pedersen than last year, I'd say. It just looks like he's in better form. So I'd say that he could try and rely on that to follow Van der Poel, or even try take it to Van der Poel on the climbs and just hope that, you know, what was happening in Gent-Wevelgem just kind of repeats itself and he tries to basically beat him in a sprint. Now, that would be, you know, quite realistic to expect that. Try and use their numbers, unlike what Visma Liesepike have been doing, you know, get their guys like Schoens and Stuyven up the road. So it means that you have to, you know, it forces the other teams to use up their guys first. So, you know, if Pedersen does have a problem, somebody can drop back and drag him up again, or if he makes a move and they can kind of relay together once he bridges up to them. So I think they're going to use their strength in numbers and really hope that Pedersen's on a magic day, very similar to Ghent. And I think they've honestly got a decent shot of taking this in multitude of scenarios, just going solo, winning it in a sprint amongst two people, winning it in a sprint amongst five to six people. It's, you know, they've got a lot of good possibilities.
Well, we might as well move the conversation on. UAE Team Emirates, sorry, you're not going to be in the favourites section. But rather, Visma Liesepike, the yellow elephant in the room, a.k.a. Jumbo Visma. Wout van Aert obviously hasn't won Ronde van Vlaanderen, come so close, been on the podium. Won Kern-Brussel-Kern this year. Podium on Omloop, very strong in that opening weekend, but obviously there was no Mathieu van der Poel there. How do you see Visma Liesepike's chances? And again, a formidably strong team by them.
They've been hit by the news like yesterday that Laporte isn't taking part, which is a bit of a blow because he
gave the European jersey to Wout, and then we're all happy. Just let him borrow it for one race.
Just let him borrow it. Imagine if I was a rule, that'd be funny. But yeah, Wout supported by, at the moment, Afini, Benoit, Jorgensen, Tratnik, and Van Baarle. The speculation being that one of the Van Dijker twins will step in for this last spot, which would be, you know, a pretty decent move. Yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, they started off so strong at the beginning of the Classics opening weekend, but now for some reason, I really feel like even like Lidl Trekker at a higher level than Visma Liesepike. And I'm not sure if that's just kind of a recency bias, but yeah, Wout obviously had that tumble at E3. We don't know where he would have come, you know, if that didn't happen. He is going to do in Dwarsdorf, which, you know, disclaimer, we're recording this before that, so we don't know what the result of that's going to be. Yeah, Jorgensen was good in this race last year, and of course he's won Paris-Nice, so he's clearly in good form. Tranek, winner of Omloop, whether, you know, he was used really early in E3 just to bring back the move of Van der Poel, I think, or something like that. So, and then Van Baarle as well, who's finished on the podium of this race. So it's a team which on paper is really strong, but for some reason just hasn't quite been working so far this year, and I can't put my finger on it.
Never really discount Visma Liesepike, whatever, because, yeah, despite it not really clicking, I mean, when it does click, it's phenomenal. But I mean, Visma Liesepike, talking to you. Yeah, hello. If you do want some advice on that last position, I did a video over on the Cycling Day Gaming channel where I included Jonas Vingegaard in your team, and it did quite well. So if you want to check that out, click above. But yeah, how does Wout win this, Patrick? That's the golden question for Wout. He desperately wants this. I mean, however much we sometimes a bit too critical of him. He's an incredible rider. Put him in any generation and this guy will do well. Almost any race he's competitive in. It's just that little bit extra that he's been outdone. I mean, imagine his Palmares if Mathieu Van Der Poel didn't exist.
Imagine he would have such a good Palmares.
10-time cyclocross champion.
Yeah.
7 monuments.
Yeah. Green jersey, Tour de France stages across the board. And that'd be fantastic. I don't know how Wout wins this. Will Van Der Poel and Pedersen be looking at each other as like the big favourites? Will Wout be given a bit of leeway? I don't think so. It's just when it comes to the cobble climbs, he just gets that kind of wouping out, like bobbing head, and then you just know that he's just ready to pop. And I just think that when it comes to the Aldequat, like especially the Paterberg, he just, for some reason, that's just like where he struggles a lot. I can only just hope that he's just got better legs. Unfortunately, he's too big of a name for them to give him leeway, but he just always seems to lack that little edge where he seems to always get dropped on the cobble climbs. So he's just in this really awkward spot where I would like to see Wout win. But I just think it's going to be really hard. Whether, say, Van Der Poel goes solo, but Pedersen and Wout are together in a group two and they bring him back on that last 15K and it's a sprint and maybe Wout's been a bit clever and let Pedersen do more of a work. Maybe Wout could win in a sprint. That's like one very niche scenario where I could see Wout doing well. But I just think it's going to be quite hard for him, unfortunately.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Don't hold your breath, Wout. I mean, do your best, Wout. We liked you a lot. Imagine a world without Wout as well. That would be sad.
That would suck.
But nevertheless, we might as well move into more of an outsiders category. And I feel like UAE Team Emirates, we should definitely mention them because they are the defending champions, despite not having Tadej Pogačar here. Yeah, Patrick, who do you think is kind of the leader out of this team? In the top five favorites video, I was saying Tim Wellens, but then I discovered later, I knew it in the video, he's not finished better than 25th, but he has had a surprisingly good spring classic or spring campaign already, finishing fourth in E3 and obviously being up there in Star Bianchi, finishing in 13th again, third time in his career, quite weird. But he was on Domestique due to then doing a lot of marking as well. He was on the podium in, was it Kern? Yeah. How are UAE going to play this year? And who do you think is their best card as well?
Yeah, I think Vellens, maybe Pollitt as well could be for them. Now, Pollitt's gone well over these long races before. Like you say, Vellens just, for some reason, hasn't had a good history of his races. I think Vellens has looked better this year than he has done in previous years where he's been at like Lotto Soudal and stuff. So it wouldn't surprise me if this is just it's a blip. And this year he does really well. I'd like to see Morgado try and get him into a breakaway or into like an early move to get up the road a little bit and anticipate. And also maybe Mikael Björk could be a decent one. I think he finished maybe, I want to say it was like top 15 or something last year, something around that. So him and Morgado, I think, should be trying to infiltrate some early moves and try and sneak away in that sense. Because I think if the big guys start attacking, they're not going to be able to hang on. So you may as well try and anticipate a little bit. So I think you've got quite a few cards to play here. But yeah, probably Vellens and Pollitt will be their main guys who they're looking towards to try and get their best results.
Well, Ineos Grenadiers, we're definitely going to mention them at one point, but not right now. Narváez crashing, my heart broke. Such a big fan of Narváez, Ecuadorian national champion. I mean, him being good at cobbles, it's just strange. It's like a Danish guy winning mountain climbs. It's a bit of the same notion here. But yeah, in terms of a rider we should mention who I completely slept on, Stefan Kuhn. We were discussing this that he actually in the last 2 years has quite an impressive record, fifth in 2022 and sixth in 2023. Obviously, he went on to do third in 2022 in Paris-Roubaix and then fifth in Paris-Roubaix the year after. So I don't know what he's doing, but it's working.
I'd probably say that this year maybe his results aren't quite as good. But he has had some he's had some like sad personal news and stuff. So I'm not sure how that's been affecting him. But maybe this year could be the year for Kuhn. He's always there. pretty much. I mean, there's also Madouas here, who, of course, also finished on the podium back in 2022, but he hasn't been as present in the Cobble Classics either. So I'd say that Kung's probably their main man. But, you know, we've got Askey and Watson, the two Brits, who could be a bit of a surprise as well. So I think it's a decent squad for Groupama, but yeah, Kung's probably the main guy to try and get a result for them.
I mean, we might as well move swiftly on as well in terms of EF Education Easy Pass. I didn't even mention this in the top five. Alberto Bettiol, 2019 champion of this race. Very strong team around them. Nilsson Paulus, also top 10 finisher last year. EF Education Easy Post, very exciting team. Mikael Wellgren, before his injuries, he was a phenomenal rider in the one-day settings, former Omloop and Amstel Gold winner. But in terms of EF Education Easy Post, quite interesting.
Yeah, it's a very interesting team. Bettiol's an interesting one because, like you say, he didn't finish E3, from what I remember. I can't remember if that was a crash or what it was that made him pull out of that. But so we don't really have a big gauge other than how he does at the Wilds Door. But he was looking very good at San Remo. He won Milano Torino in kind of that same week as well. So he's obviously in fantastic form. So I think that Bettiol's definitely one to be looking out for. I think that he is trying to repeat that 2019 feat that he managed to do. And I think that he's got a decent shot of doing it. I think the fact that he DNF'd E3 gives him this sort of stealth aspect where people aren't quite sure. And maybe because he's not, you know, the biggest name, maybe people will be more willing to give him a bit of leeway if he attacks a bit earlier. So I think that Bettiol's got a decent shot as an outsider to try and pull off, you know, a top five or even better.
I mean, if we're just rolling through there's a lot of outsiders. I mean, Bahrain Victorious, Matej Morhej, not a great record at this race. For some reason, I thought he had a blistering record. Well, three top tens, I was assuming, but I haven't finished that inside the top 20 yet. Fred Wright, very strong in this race. He's been in the top 10 last year. One of your personal favorites as well, from Movistar, Oya Loscano, didn't finish last year, but they had Matteo Jorgensen in the team. He was ninth place, so potentially he can be given an opportunity. Jaco Jula as well, with Michael Matthews, second place, as we know, in Milan-San Remo. Alexander Kristoff as well, former champion. And Kef Beskain, former champion as well. He seems to be going a bit stronger than he was in the last few years. But yeah, Patrick, out of them or anyone else, who's kind of riders that you're looking at?
Trenton as well, maybe.
Oh, true. He was showing himself a bit.
He could be an interesting one.
I think he was top 10 last year, in fact.
Yeah, I think he was, actually. Binny?
Yeah. I mean, Binny crashed last year, which was on his birthday. Like, you can almost not have a worse birthday. He's like, starts, monument start, first Tour of Flanders, riding for a Belgian team. Here we go. Defending Gent-Wevelgem, well, kind of was. And then, crash. But I mean, that was the same for Wellens. We didn't mention that. Wellens got taken out by that viral Filip Majcik crash.
Yeah.
That transcended the sport once again. It's annoying when the sport only gets on the mainstream news because of a crash.
Yeah. And I'd say one other name, maybe Alaphilippe. Maybe he can put those 2020 demons behind him. I mean, he was decent at San Remo, but he didn't get a particularly great result at E3. But I think a Sudar Quickstep could certainly. He's a big stage performer, as Alaphilippe. You know, he kind of comes out of nowhere and does really well at your World Championships and your Lieges and stuff like that. So, big stage Alaphilippe could maybe pull something out of the bag.
That 2020 breakaway with Wout van Aert, Mathieu van der Poel and Alaphilippe in the rainbow jersey. Oh my goodness, that's like ecstasy levels for cycling fans. If we had something like that again, I mean, it doesn't work now because Mathieu has the jersey. He stole the jersey. Yeah, I mean, what do you think of Florin Seneschal or Jordi Meus, who was third in that sprint? I know Gent-Wevelgem, like you said, isn't as hard, but what is the point of Bora at this race? If really, is it Danny van Poppel your favorite? I mean, he's been looking very strong. What is the point of Bora?
I think that
did they not send their PR check to you this week?
No, I'm nowhere near that. I just think that there are a few teams here who are probably hoping that they can, you know, usually you see if somebody goes solo, maybe there's like a group behind of 10 people who sprint it out for some of the minor places, and maybe they're hoping that they could get Mayus into that to do, just to try and sprint to a decent enough position. But yeah, Bora is a bit of a weird one. They don't have the strongest classics team. It wouldn't surprise me if they tried to get into the break once more with some of their riders to try and get ahead of the action before it kicks off.
And to any Scandinavians, viewers or listeners, myself included in this, obviously, we do have two Swedish riders. So that thing that I've been craving, to have this Scandinavian battle, we have plenty of Norwegians, unfortunately. No, I love you guys, don't worry. But plenty of Danes as well. And then we have two Swedes in form of Tobias Ludvigsson, who we all kind of know who he is, and Jakob Eriksson, riding for Tour Pro Cycling and the prior riding for Q36.5. So potentially Sweden can get going in this. But I don't know where I was going with that. But Denmark, plenty of Danes. That's all us Danes need to worry about. And yeah, there's some Yorkshiremen, I guess, as well. But Ineos Grenadiers, we might as well finish on them. They haven't got Pidcock here, as you said in our other preview. I think, was it even our predictions video, that he's focusing more on the Ardennes, which is great because he was absolutely good last year. He got podiums there. But how do you see this team? Question mark over Narváez, obviously, after that crash, which I'm still mourning, as I said. But a very Yorkshire-filled team here. Yeah, it's almost Yorkshire.
Can you include Sheffield just because he's got the name? Of
yeah, there you go. There we go.
It's the same thing.
Just call them Ineos Yorkshire from now on.
Literally, you may as well do. They're working for Turner and Gent-Wevelgem, so obviously, like you say, Navarro is crossing out about. We don't know what's going on with him. Hopefully he's fine, because he would be a fantastic contender to be, I'd say, honestly, cracking a top five in this race. If that's not the case, yeah, Turner's probably going to be their man to try and realistically get a top 10 would be a decent ambition. But yeah, then we've got Ben Swift, Connor Swift, Luke Rowe, Sheffield. We've got another man who's yet to come in. And Cameron Wirth is kind of floating around as maybe a possibility.
He was still riding, to be honest.
I know. Well, he's on the Stylist for Dwars Door Flandern, so I'm going to presume that they might be bringing him to Flanders as well.
The Ironman cross sport rider. Amazing story.
Yeah. Literally.
But anyways, we might as well get to our favorite part of the show, the predictions. And I can't even remember what we did in our World Tour predictions at the start of the year, but I think we can start with a clean slate. Who's your top three for this year? I should have gone first.
You probably should. I want to include somebody cool. Like a bit of a rogue.
Mathieu van der Poel, double world champion, isn't cool enough for you?
Well, no, somebody less predictable.
Okay.
I'm going to go with third place is going to be Lars Kärna. Second place will be Pedersen, and van der Poel will win.
What happens with Wout?
He's fourth.
In the one-off position.
But Wout van Aert, Flanders position is fourth. I was trying to think of a scenario where I can get him in that, but he let me down at E3. I don't want to get burnt, I guess.
Okay, I will bat for the Wout corner. Pedersen in third, Mathieu van der Poel in second because he has the rainbow jersey, and Wout van Aert wins his first Tour of Flanders.
I'd love to see it. I think it would be.
Laporte, give him your European jersey. That's what we desperately want. But anyways, coming to our extra prediction round, and I think it should be one of the previous champions, Kasper Asgreen. Where is he going to finish?
22nd.
Oh, okay. I'm going to say, because that Soudal Quickstep team, yeah, you mentioned Alaphilippe, Kasper, put Austin in there as well. I'm going to say 8th. That would be very nice. Ooh, if you could do that. Yes. But anyways, that's basically it for our preview show here on the channel. Make sure to check out the top 5 as well. That was up yesterday, or whenever you're watching this. It's here, wherever. Click here. And if you want to see me try and win Tour of Flanders with Johannes Vingegaard, you can click over here as well. And of course, as always, check out Patrick's own channel, Audio Cycling. There's going to be a preview of Duastel Flandrin if you're watching this before Duastel Flandrin, and then Tour of Flanders as well. So check that as well. And if you want to see more of Patrick, the Echelon Cycling Podcast is his primary home. Sorry, Audio Cycling. But yeah, with that, make sure to hit the like button, subscribe to the channel, comment down below who you think is going to win as well before the race. I know a lot of you do the sneak away, but yeah, with that, thank you for watching, and we will see you around.